from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
Well, one more night. You just have to put up with me for one more night, and I promise you Matt Pauley will be back tomorrow night. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley here on this Thursday night edition of the Graybar Sports Open Line. Seriously, though, great to be back. Glad to have everyone with us. Hope it's been a good week. It's certainly been a good week for me here in this chair, and I appreciate the chance to chat with everyone that we've chatted with so far this week and to chat with you. And I hope to have some time for some calls tonight. I've said that during the week. I've only taken a couple of calls. I think it looks like there's some time tonight in our 7 o'clock hour to get to some calls. So if you're thinking about it, tonight looks like it's going to be the night. Though, I do have some nice guests joining us tonight. Brian Dunseth is going to join us in the next segment. He's an Apple TV match analyst on the MLS Season Pass. He had the game last night against Seattle. He's also going to be on the game coming up against Sporting KC this weekend. So we'll chat with him about, what he's seen really in looking at City and really compared to maybe what he saw last year, maybe what he thinks some of the differences are. We'll chat with him. We'll chat some golf coming up at 6:35. Dan Reardon, KMOX golf editor, will be with us coming up in the at 6:35 at 7:20. Tamar Scheer from Camo V4 will be with us. I was trying to remember. I don't think that I've had a chance to chat with her on this program. We chat in different settings all the time. I actually first met her before she came to St. Louis because she knew Tom Ackerman. They're both Indiana grads, and that was the connection. And I met her at Media Day for the Ohio Valley Conference for Basketball Media Day because we were there in Evansville, and that's where she was working before she came to St. Louis. So we've known before she returned to St. Louis. She is a St. Louis native. So we'll chat with her. She covered a really cool story today, and we'll get you in on that. That comes up in our 7 o'clock hour. And then I'm pretty open after that 7:20 spot. So the last couple of segments, we could dedicate those to some phone calls if you'd like. I also may have the opportunity to let you hear a little bit from Oliver Marmol. He visited yesterday with Tom Ackerman. So if we have a chance, we'll dig that up and let you hear a little bit of that. That's a little bit of what's coming up here on the show tonight. I just made a note of a couple of things that I wanted to chat about, and that certainly we can do that with the calls as well. I don't know if you saw ESPN's top pro athletes of the 21st century. That is the way they have deemed it, is the top pro athletes of the 21st century. So since the year 2000. And it's interesting, and I had this discussion with Kevin Wheeler and with Kyle Sixta, who's in with us tonight. He's behind the board. And we were talking about just kind of what that means. What does it mean to be an athlete? And it does say pro athletes, the top 100 professional athletes. But it still is a hard thing to define. And it's hard when you have, I can tell you, the top couple of folks on the list, Michael Phelps, Serena Williams, that's one and two. Lionel Messi is number three. LeBron James is number four. Tom Brady is number five. Are they all great athletes? I don't know. They're all great at what they do in their sport. I would guess that Michael Phelps is a pretty darn good athlete because you've got to be a competitive swimmer. Simone Biles is on the list at number seven. Roger Federer is number six, by the way. I would tend to skew towards someone like Simone Biles when you're talking about an athlete, right?
Yeah, I would agree. I think there's a difference between, you know, being an athlete and being successful, like you said.
Being good at
your
sport.
Right. I mean, you're not going to see someone like Tiger Woods or someone like that, you know, running a fast 40-yard dash when you have Usain Bolt lower on the list. Like, if you're talking athletically, Usain Bolt's probably the guy or someone like that.
Agreed.
But it just depends on how you interpret
it,
I guess.
Tiger Woods at 8 and Usain Bolt at 9, and that is a very good point. Kobe Bryant is number 10. That rounds out the top 10. Albert Pujols is the highest rated baseball player on the list. He comes in at number 24. But again, I don't look at Albert Pujols and scream athlete. I look at Albert Pujols and scream great baseball player, great hitter. he was an athlete. He played, obviously played first base for a good portion of his career. But again, when you're talking about comparing him to like Simone Biles or a Michael Phelps, I don't know. It's hard when you don't have strictly defined parameters.
Exactly. And it's just hard to compare these sports to begin with. It's, you know, Tom Brady, he's arguably the greatest football player. How do you compare him to someone like Michael Phelps, who just competes and dominates the Olympics and racks up gold medals? It's just, it's not one-to-one. It's not apples to apples. It's completely different, and that's what makes it so hard.
Totally agree. And I would say that a football player, leads to more of an athlete than, say, a baseball player. So I would agree with, you know, him being up much higher than Albert Pujols. But it's interesting. I don't have the answer, because I don't know what you would term them as. Pro athletes is the term that ESPN uses. So, and you can't just say pro sports figures, because then I think you're talking about, are there coaches that need to be in there? So I don't know. It's interesting nonetheless. If nothing else, it gives us something to chat about during the All-Star break.
That's for sure. And one thing that's for sure is that no one is going to agree on this.
Oh,
everyone's
sure.
going to have their own opinion. So it's good debate.
And it's exactly what ESPN wanted out of this.
They
wanted people like me to chat about it on the Thursday night in the All-Star break when there's not much else going on. But we have some stuff to talk about. We're going to get started with some St. Louis City and some MLS soccer coming up on the other side of the break when we visit with Brian Dunseth. He's an MLS season pass match analyst. He's coming up. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly, and we're coming back on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
It is Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly this week here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Happy to have you along with us tonight as we work our way through the last night here of the All-Star break. And of course, still plenty going on, still plenty to talk about, including St. Louis City SC. They dropped a match last night on the road at Seattle. They're on a road trip. They continue on their road trip to Sporting KC. And Brian Dunseth, I don't know if you're on the trip with the team or you're just traveling alongside, but you were there last night as part of the Apple TV broadcast, and you'll be there this weekend again. Thanks for some time.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Have a quick pit stop at home, taking my kids out to their soccer practice, and then tomorrow afternoon off to Kansas City for one heck of a rivalry match between these two teams.
It is, and you know, hopefully that it hasn't lost its luster, because it's obviously been a tough season, a tough stretch right now for St. Louis City SC. Just give us an idea, your thoughts after seeing City last night. I don't know if you've seen them this year yet, until last night, that is, but just kind of your thoughts on what you saw from City last night.
Yeah, I've actually covered the team on four or five different occasions, starting on the road at Austin in the beginning of the year when, you know, the idea was Sam Adeniran and AZ Jackson and Joao Klaus and Celio Pompeo and what that kind of quad or trifecta was going to look like in the attack for Bradley Carnell. And obviously, things have gone horrifically sideways to the point where Bradley Carnell was dismissed back on January 1st and John Hackworth takes over and trying to steady the ship. You know, it's been less than ideal, and I think right now it's a little bit of a crisis of confidence. But with the summer transfer window opening up and the three signings going to be registered and available this weekend at Sporting Kansas City, you know, you think about the psychology of the group, you think about the momentum, and right now, like I was saying during the broadcast at Seattle, this group needs little wins. And little wins could be Tim Parker clearing the ball off the line. Little wins could be not having Tim Parker, unfortunately, deflect the ball into his own goal. But, you know, I've been a part of these teams where things seem to be going horrifically sideways, and you just can't figure out how to find that little bit of momentum. But if there was ever a time to find that bit of momentum, it's certainly against Sporting Kansas City on Saturday night.
And not only the Sporting KC game, but then, of course, you get into the Leagues Cup break, and it's a chance to then kind of, hopefully, ideally, you have these three kind of get a chance to train, get a chance to work their way into this club more intimately, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've got a couple trains of thought, right? You know, when you sign players, even if they're not eligible right away, you want to get them, you know, like they did with Edward Leuven, like they did with Joao Klaus, like they did with Roman Berkey. you want to get them settled intimately with the city where, you know, they've got their house sorted and families can get sorted out and schools can get picked out, feels comfortable with where they're at. And sometimes that's available, sometimes it's not available. But you're right. Right now you're looking for a little bit of momentum, and a positive result goes a long way with the start of League's Cup. And understanding that, you know, you obviously are concerned about League's Cup and want to put your best foot forward and showcase that this is an incredible organization that has high-level potential. But at the same time, you want to use that momentum to get yourself back on track. And using Sporting Kansas City as a perfect example, you know, they struggled horrifically in the first phase of the season and then found their momentum. And what we've seen in Major League Soccer is if you can rattle off 3, 4, 5 games in a row, all of a sudden it completely changes the trajectory of what your season looked like. And we saw that with Seattle early in the season. Brian Smetzer's team, they couldn't buy their luck. And next thing you know, they find themselves with 10 wins, a loss, and 4 draws in 15 matches. And all of a sudden, things look different, things feel different, and that momentum completely changes the way that you're looking at heading in. You know, and I was saying this with Max Brados the other night. You know, for Seattle, they almost don't want the league to stop. They want to continue this momentum, whereas for St. Louis, it's almost an ideal time for League's Cup to kind of upset the rhythm of Major League Soccer and give themselves kind of a different format to look like and an opportunity, as you said, to bet in some of these, you know, dynamic new players that can make a difference in the roster.
Brian Dunseth is with us. He is a match analyst on the MLS Season Pass. And you were talking about the kind of the quad of players. And, of course, AZ Jackson, you mentioned he is no longer with the team. And now today, Sam Adeniran leaves. He goes to Philly. Was there any other, at least from everything that we hear and from kind of the saga that we followed, it didn't seem like there was any other outcome than eventually Sam Adeniran going somewhere else.
Yeah, which is too bad. Because I thought last year Sam played a vital role coming off the bench, and you know, at a time when Joao Klaus had that hamstring injury and just couldn't kind of get himself right, he was kind of the perfect foil coming in and either closing games out or chasing games with Joaquini. When Joaquini, you know, heading over to Como, finding you know, success and promotion to Serie A, you know, at the beginning of the season, Sam, you know, was it going to be Sam's position? Was it going to be Klaus's position? Was it going to be both of them, you know, playing in a 4-4-2 with a diamond formation underneath them? And Bradley tried to figure it out. So, you know, whether it's performance, whether it's personality, the reality is, you know, there's short timelines for professional soccer players, professional footballers. And the fact that this club felt like this was the right move right now, whether that's Lutz, whether that was Bradley, whether that's John Hackworth, you know, the reality is, if you don't think it's working out, you got to make the decision. You got to be ruthless and you got to be cunning. And so now you bring in a couple of guys that can play as a 10 or as a 9 or as a wide player, play as a central midfielder. So the spine of the team is going to get stronger. And now you're able to capitalize with whatever the final amount of money is for Sam going over to Philly. Now you can, in an international transfer window, either within the league or outside of the league, knowing Lutz's connections and the connectivity he has, to go out and find the player that you feel best fits what this club needs currently.
Brian Dunseth, a longtime player here in the U.S., including with the U.S. men's national team. I want to ask you about something, if you don't mind. We had some news today that St. Louis City organized, got a meeting together, facilitated a meeting between Major League Soccer and supporters groups talking about the future of MLS playing in the U.S. Open Cup. Do you feel like, or do you have strong feelings on whether or not MLS should have a stronger presence in U.S. in the U.S. Open Cup?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to a guy that won the Open Cup. So the U.S. Open Cup is something that is really, really special to me. I won it with the Columbus Crew back in the day with Lamar Hunt, whose name is on the trophy, him in the first MLS soccer-specific stadium, which was, you know, the old historic Crew Stadium. So, you know, for me, the DNA, the genetic inside of the game is important, the representation of U.S. Open Cup. But I also understand that with the growth of CONCACAF Champions Cup, with, you know, the continued evolution of success of multiple competitions, that sometimes things get a little bit more difficult, a little bit more convoluted. But, you know, being a kid in Southern California and understanding the history of what St. Louis soccer has meant historically, you know, to the United States and to these different cup competitions, I loved it, you know, and I love that MLS was receptive enough to recognize that, you know, St. Louis is a club that wants to be involved and wants to have a presence in the U.S. Open Cup. So, yeah, I guess I'm an old head when it comes to what U.S. Open Cup has meant. I've had success in MLS. I've also had success with amateur teams, you know, with Hollywood United and going up to the Portland Timbers and knocking them out of U.S. Open Cup and understanding what these fairy tale runs could mean. So, you know, I love it. I love that there's an open dialogue. I love that, you know, there's an opportunity for cooler heads to prevail and understand that, you know, for some of these clubs in MLS, it's a non-negotiable. You know, they do want to partake and be a part of the U.S. Open Cup and what historically that has meant to this country.
It'll be St. Louis City SC playing at Sporting KC on the 20th on Saturday. It's a 7:30 kickoff time. Brian will be on that call. Brian Dunsett, thanks for some time tonight. Appreciate your insight and the chance to catch up.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Anytime, man. Good catching up with you.
Absolutely. Brian Dunseth with us from Apple TV, a match analyst on the MLS season pass. And again, he'll be on that call coming up on Saturday. He was on the call last night as well. Good insight from him. Good to hear. I actually didn't realize he had won the Open Cup. I figured he had been part of the Open Cup, so that was even cooler to hear that. When we come back, we're going to switch gears. We're going to talk a little golf. The British Open, the Open Championship, if you will, underway in Scotland, and we'll talk to Dan Reardon on the other side of the break as the Grey Bar Sports Open line continues here on a Thursday night. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly, and we're coming right back on Camo X. The Grey Bar Sports Open line continues for a Thursday night. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. One more night. Baseball's back tomorrow, and so is Matt Pauly for you for the pre- and post-game coverage of the Cards and the Braves tomorrow. So we continue on tonight, and happy to welcome in the Camo X golf editor, longtime golf reporter Dan Reardon with us here as the 152nd Open Championship has gotten underway. Dan, I appreciate the time tonight.
I appreciate the opportunity. It's funny you say the 152nd. I did a setup piece this morning for Tom Ackerman. I pointed out the first Open Championship was conducted the same year that Abraham Lincoln was elected president.
That's amazing.
It is. It's the Pony Express was launched that same year as well. But that gives you the depth of this championship.
Yeah, when you put it in a context like that, is unreal to think about that. Dan, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been covering golf for us here at Camo X?
My first assignment for Camo X was the 1985 U.S. Open at Oakland Hills.
Man, that is fantastic. Because I know that, I was listening back then, so I always heard you as just listening, and now I get a chance to do this, so I really appreciate it. So one day, one round in the books, Daniel Brown right now at the top of the leaderboard, and there is at least an Irish golfer near the top of the leaderboard, maybe not who people had hoped or thought it might be, but Shane Lowry is up there as well. What has stood out from round one for you so far?
Two things. First of all, if you look at the top 10 on the leaderboard of the first day, six of those 10 players are names you would not expect to find on a leaderboard at a major championship. Now, and then that's because this is the first round. The other thing that is the explanation for why this round turned out much different than maybe people expected is the players had no wind to practice on Monday and Tuesday. You expect weather to be a factor in an Open Championship. On Wednesday, they had wind, and they practiced and prepared for those circumstances. But when they got to the course today, the wind was blowing 180-degree different. So their preparation was a complete waste of time, and those crosswinds just played havoc with the entire field throughout the day.
It's at the Royal Troon Golf Club, and I frankly didn't know a lot about that particular course. I was reading about it earlier today, and just I know sometimes the wind can be, it's basically that back nine when you're coming back right in your face is often what it is. You said today it's more of a crosswind they're dealing with?
It is crosswind, but it's also what would typically be downwind on this golf course, which we the back nine was into your face, and what was typically into your face was it was just a complete reversal. And the players haven't been here since Henrik Stenson won back in the mid-teens. So they haven't been to this course in a number of years. And for a lot of these players, it's their first ever chance. So, like I said, you get that sort of upside-down leaderboard, at least at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, Daniel Brown is a 29-year-old who's playing his first major championship, barely got into the event. He's having his day at the top, but you don't expect to see him around. You mentioned the Irish connection. Shane Lowry won the sort of dream Open Championship when the Irish guy won at Royal Port Rush in 2019. Even Lowry, I think, is a little bit of a surprise with this start. The most legitimate name, I think, in that group is probably Justin Thomas. Played well the opening round last week, has two majors under his belt, and actually played extremely well, had seven birdies in his round. And but for one double bogey and a couple of bogeys, but one double, he would have been right there amongst the top three names, or top two names.
And, I was kind of referencing Rory McIlroy. It took some time off, did play at the Scottish Open, and had a decent showing at the Scottish Open. Did you expect, or do you expect, I guess, that this could be a good week for him?
I would have thought so. I mean, everything he said going into the tournament sounded like the right thing to say. I mean, he was asked again about the collapse at Pinehurst and everything he had to say. And actually, after his round today, when he talked, he was actually sort of happy with the way he struck the ball, but he said he just could never get anything started. So instead of being among the leaders, he's one of these guys sitting at 6, 7, 8 under par who are looking to try to make it to the weekend. And he's not alone in that category. There's a number of players, including, and I'm not so much a surprise, but including Tiger Woods, who opened with a 79. And, you know, Tiger had the controversy, a little bit of a controversy, and that Colin Montgomery said earlier in the week he thought Tiger shouldn't be
right.
He's making Colin look pretty good right now.
Yeah, and that I did like the comeback, though. He said that he's got the championship. He doesn't have to worry about it where Colin doesn't.
Tiger can talk smack.
Right.
And, you know, the funny thing about Tiger's round was he had 6, 7 bogeys on the round. On all but two of the bogeys, his drive hit the fairway. So his problem was clearly the irons, and then I think he had 3 putts in the round. But the point I'm trying to make is, you know, when you've done everything that you could possibly do, when is it time to say when? Well, it's Tiger's decision, and he apparently is not. He talked about he feels better physically than he's ever felt since the car accident, and this will be the last time we see him until December for his hero event, and then probably not until next year at the Masters.
Yeah, you raise a great point, and I think, I mean, obviously it's not just golf. It's many sports that we see that. When is it time, or when is, you know, it's past time, and that's I can't imagine that. I can't connect with that, not being certainly an athlete at that kind of level at all. So, you know, I understand. I guess if you can still do it, more power to you, right?
I just think it's unfortunate that the records Tiger is setting these days are the records for his worst ever, whether it's a round at the Masters, whether it's a finish at the PGA, whatever it might be. He's filling up the wrong side of the record
right.
book. Now, let's give him the fact that when he made the cut at Augusta, he became the all-time leader in cuts made at the Masters.
The Graybar Sports Open Line continues for a Thursday night. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. One more night. Baseball's back tomorrow, and so is Matt Pauly for you for the pre- and post-game coverage of the Cards and the Braves tomorrow. So we continue on tonight, and happy to welcome in the Camo X Golf Editor, longtime golf reporter Dan Reardon with us here as the 152nd Open Championship has gotten underway. Dan, I appreciate the time tonight.
I appreciate the opportunity. You know, it's funny you say the 152nd. I did a setup piece this morning for Tom Ackman. I pointed out the first Open Championship was conducted the same year that Abraham Lincoln was elected president.
That's amazing.
It is. It's the Pony Express was launched that same year as well. But that gives you the depth of this championship.
Yeah, when you put it in a context like that, is unreal to think about that. Dan, how long have you been doing this? How long have you been covering golf for us here at Camo X?
My first assignment for Camo X was the 1985 U.S. Open at Oakland Hills.
Man, that is fantastic. Because I know that, I was listening back then, so I always heard you as just listening, and now I get a chance to do this, so I really appreciate it. So one day, one round in the books, Daniel Brown right now at the top of the leaderboard, and there is at least an Irish golfer near the top of the leaderboard, maybe not who people had hoped or thought it might be, but Shane Lowry is up there as well. What has stood out from round one for you so far?
Two things. First of all, if you look at the top 10 on the leaderboard of the first day, six of those 10 players are names you would not expect to find on a leaderboard at a major championship. Now, and then that's because this is the first round. The other thing that is the explanation for why this round turned out much different than maybe people expected is the players had no wind to practice on Monday and Tuesday. You expect weather to be a factor in an open championship. On Wednesday, they had wind, and they practiced and prepared for those circumstances. But when they got to the course today, the wind was blowing 180-degree different. And so their preparation was a complete waste of time, and those crosswinds just played havoc with the entire field throughout the day.
It's at the Royal Troon Golf Club, and I frankly didn't know a lot about that particular course. I was reading about it earlier today, and just I know sometimes the wind can be, it's basically that back nine when you're coming back right in your face is often what it is. You said today it's more of a crosswind they're dealing with?
It is crosswind, but it's also what would typically be downwind on this golf course, which the back nine was into your face, and what was typically into your face was just a complete reversal. And the players haven't been here since Henrik Stenson won back in the mid-teens. So they haven't been to this course in a number of years. And for a lot of these players, it's their first ever chance. So like I said, you get that sort of upside-down leaderboard, at least at the top of the leaderboard. I mean, Daniel Brown is a 29-year-old who's playing his first major championship, barely got into the event. He's having his day at the top, but you don't expect to see him around. You mentioned the Irish connection. Shane Lowry won the sort of dream Open Championship when the Irish guy won at Royal Port Rush in 2019. Even Lowry, I think, is a little bit of a surprise with this start. The most legitimate name, I think, in that group is probably Justin Thomas. Played well the opening round last week, has two majors under his belt, and actually played extremely well, had seven birdies in his round. And but for one double bogey and a couple of bogeys, but one double, he would have been right there amongst the top three names, or top two names.
And I was kind of referencing Rory McIlroy, took some time off, did play at the Scottish Open, and had a decent showing at the Scottish Open. Did you expect, or do you expect, I guess, that this could be a good week for him?
I would have thought so. I mean, everything he said going into the tournament sounded like the right thing to say. I mean, he was asked again about the collapse at Pinehurst and everything he had to say. And actually, after his round today, when he talked, he was actually sort of happy with the way he struck the ball, but he said he just could never get anything started. So instead of being among the leaders, he's one of these guys sitting at 6, 7, 8 under par who are looking to try to make it to the weekend. And he's not alone in that category. There's a number of players, including, and I'm not so much a surprise, but including Tiger Woods, who opened with a 79. And, Tiger had the controversy, a little bit of a controversy, and that Colin Montgomery said earlier in the week he thought Tiger shouldn't be
right.
He's making Colin look pretty good right now.
Yeah, and that I did like the comeback, though. He said that he's got the championship. He doesn't have to worry about it where Colin doesn't.
Tiger can talk smack.
Right.
And, funny thing about Tiger's round was he had 6, 7 bogeys on the round. On all but two of the bogeys, his drive hit the fairway. So his problem was clearly the irons, and then I think he had 3 putts in the round. But the point I'm trying to make is, when you've done everything that you could possibly do, when is it time to say when? Well, it's Tiger's decision, and he apparently is not. He talked about he feels better physically than he's ever felt since the car accident, and this will be the last time we see him until December for his hero event, and then probably not until next year at the Masters.
Yeah, you raise a great point, and I think, I mean, obviously it's not just golf, it's many sports that we see that. When is it time, or when is, you know, it's past time, and that's, I can't imagine that. I can't connect with that, not being certainly an athlete at that kind of level at all. So, you know, I understand. I guess if you can still do it, more power to you, right?
I just think it's unfortunate that the records Tiger is setting these days are the records for his worst ever, whether it's a round at the Masters, whether it's a finish at the PGA, whatever it might be. He's filling up the wrong side of the record
right
book. Now, let's give him the fact that when he made the cut at Augusta, he became the all-time leader in cuts made at the Masters. So he did accomplish that. But it's just, you know, the numbers like 79, 80, 81, you don't associate with Tiger, and you'll look for him to shoot nines in the 40s. So, but like I said, he's Tiger, and he draws the galleries, and he's entitled to do this as long as he wants to do this.
Dan Reardon, Camo X Golf Editor, with us here as we talk a little bit about the Open Championship. What do you know, or what do you know what the conditions will be as we go forward the next couple of days?
We expect that the wind conditions will be exactly the same. By the way, it was quite cold again today. We expect that will be the same for tomorrow. And then when we get to the weekend, it's a little uncertain which direction that's going to go. And, you know, when I sort of downplayed the leaderboard, we have to throw in that right off of that top 10, you have people like Brooks Koepka at 1-under. You had Scottie Scheffler at 1-under. You have Matthew Fitzpatrick 1-under. Adam Scott and Xander Schauffele at 2-under. So you have names ready to make a move in this championship. They just didn't quite do it today.
Do they have the opportunity, do you think, to make that move?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. One thing that you can say about tour players, they learned. They learned from the first day to the last day. So you can throw conditions at them, and you may fool them one day. And when they come out the next day, if they face the same circumstance, they'll have learned their lessons. So, you know, today we had, I think, 17 scores under par. I think that number probably will go, maybe not go up. I think we'll have at least that many under par tomorrow. And the trick will be how many of those who are currently under will be in that category. And it, you know, the Schefflers and the Schaufflies and the people like that, they have a track record of doing this on multiple rounds. And I would expect we'll see that tomorrow. And then it remains to be seen out of those sort of lesser names that are currently in the top 10. How many of them survive into the end of the second round and make the cut?
Can they stay there? Right. That's exactly right. Dan, I appreciate the chance to catch up and talk a little Open Championship with you. And we'll be watching, of course, the next 3 days. And we'll hear from you, I know, throughout the weekend here on Camo X on various shows. So I appreciate the time.
And I enjoyed the invitation, Joe. Nice being with you.
Absolutely. Dan Reardon, Camo X Golf Editor, with us. And we have more to do here on the Graybar Sports Open Line as we continue along on a Thursday night. We can talk a little more baseball if you'd like here in the end of this hour and going into the 7 o'clock hour. Plenty to do. And we'll do that on the other side of the break. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. The Graybar Sports Open Line continues after this on Camo X.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Live. Once again, Matt Pauly on King of OX.
We're back in on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott with you in for Matt Pauly all week long. And of course, there's naturally, we've talked a lot about the Cardinals and the first half the Cardinals have had and, you know, expectations, like reasonable expectations of what this team can be. I say first half. You know by now it's not the first half. The first half was eclipsed earlier in the season. So this is kind of, I was messing around for my own doing, really. I was trying to figure out what it looks like reasonably. Again, what do you expect? What can you expect from the Cardinals? So 66 games to play for the Cardinals. If you look at the last 66 games the Cardinals played, they were 36-30, which, of course, that is right on par, right? Because you're four games over right now. If you're telling me they're within two or three games or four or five games, whatever, of 500, that's fine. However, that includes a stretch from April 30th to May 11th. And remember, May 11th was the end of that losing streak. They were 1-8. From April 30th to May 11th, they were 1-8. So that is included in that last 36 games. So then you take the May 12th date. That's the date that everybody is pushing out there. That's the Mother's Day. That was the last day in Milwaukee. It was when the losing streak ended, 7-game losing streak. They're 35-22 since that game. That's a 614 winning percentage. So, okay, let's go back, because if you go 36-30, which is what the last 66 was, you're 86-76. That's what this team would be, which I don't think is out of the question at all. I think it's probably pretty reasonable. If you play baseball at a 614 winning percentage, which is what they have done since May 12th, you're 90-72. It gives you about 40 wins. In fact, 40 and a half. So you're roughly 90 wins, which in that case, you feel pretty good about yourselves. I'll tell you, last year, the National League wildcard teams were in at 84-78. So if you just go 86-76, you at least feel like there's a reasonable shot you're getting into the playoffs. And keep in mind, the Diamondbacks got in at 84-78, and they were the National League champs. So it can happen. The Brewers, by the way, right now playing 567 baseball, which is exactly what they did last year. That's identical to where the Brewers were last year. That gets them, if they stay right where they are, to 37 more wins. They're 92-70. So you're looking, I think it's reasonable to expect that this team, the Cardinals team, could be in the mix, A, for the division, the Central Division, and B, certainly for a wild card spot, which is, of course, where you are now. You're in the wild card spot before you get started after the All-Star break. And you're 4.5 games out in the National League Central Division. So I without a doubt, think it is plenty reasonable to believe that this team is going to be in the conversation as we move through the last, a little less than a third of the season to play after, or a little more than a third of the season to play after the All-Star break. And then you start thinking about if they make a move. Can they make a move? Can they somewhere, somehow improve the team? And again, I've talked a lot about it the last 3 days. Like, where does that happen? Does it happen in the bullpen? Do you get a starter? Do you get a bench bat, a right-handed bat off the bench? Those are, I think anybody would tell you, those are the three spots, right? I think in order, it would have to be, I think my top one would have to be a spot in the rotation. A number two guy, preferably, if you can get that, if you can improve your rotation. Because I get it, this lineup isn't what people expected that it was going to be, and the lineup isn't what I think that it probably still can be with when you consider the fact that you're not getting at all what you should or expected to be getting from the two big hitters in the lineup, right? You're getting maybe more than you expected from Mason Wynn and Alec Burleson, so you're picking up some of that slack, but the lineup does have the ability to be dangerous, and we've seen it on a number of occasions. The other thing is the bullpen is really good and can sustain it when it's a close game, whether it's you're down a run and you need a bullpen, couple of bullpen arms to withstand 2 innings, 3 innings, whatever it's been, so you can come back, or you're up a run and you need the bullpen to hold pat so you can win a game. That's what the Cardinals have done all year long. They've won those close games, the one-run games, at one point, and I don't know where they rank right now as far as in comparison to the rest of the league, but the one-run wins have been what has sustained this team throughout the first half, or the pre-All-Star break, I should say, of the baseball season. In one-run games, they are 18-12. Now, at one point, that was in the top two or three of the National League in one-run games. In blowout games, in games decided by five or more runs, they're 7-15. So they don't win a lot of those, and they do lose their share of those. That's why, as you hear everybody talk about, they've got the negative run differential despite having a winning record. Or I should say they have a winning record despite having the negative run differential. But I think just essentially playing how you have played, if you're the Cardinals, playing how you have played, certainly for the last couple of months, but even in a wider scale, if you're essentially playing the way that this team has played from start to finish, from start to right now, you are looking at a team that is likely to be in the postseason, probably as a wild card, but will be in the conversation for the National League Central Division. You've still got games to play against the Brewers. They have played well. They have actually played well against the teams that have done well this year. They played well against the teams with winning records. You know, they had the tough series against the White Sox. They had a terrible series against the Colorado Rockies at home. You see both of those again coming up later in this season. But there is the opportunity. It starts tomorrow. The Cardinals are back at it tomorrow night against Atlanta. You've got Atlanta. You've got Pittsburgh. You come home for Washington and Texas. That's the end of the month. That's the end of the time before the trade deadline as well, because that Washington series takes you right to Sunday the 28th. Monday the 29th. In St. Louis, and then it's the 30th, I believe, is the trade deadline. So July 30th is the transaction deadline. That's where, who knows? That's what we're going to be talking about from now until then, is trying to figure out what, if anything, the Cardinals are going to do. We've got more to come in hour number two of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll talk to Tamar Scheer of KMOV. We'll hopefully have some time to take your calls as well. Joe Pott for Matt Pauly here on this Thursday night. Sports Open Line continues after this.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We're back in on the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott with you in for Matt Pauly all week long. And, of course, there's naturally, we've talked a lot about the Cardinals and the first half the Cardinals have had and, you know, expectations, like reasonable expectations of what this team can be. I say first half. You know by now it's not the first half. The first half was eclipsed earlier in the season. So this is kind of, I was messing around for my own doing, really. I was trying to figure out what it looks like reasonably. Again, what do you expect? What can you expect from the Cardinals? So 66 games to play for the Cardinals. If you look at the last 66 games the Cardinals played, they were 36-30, which, of course, that is right on par, right? Because you're four games over right now. If you're telling me they're within two or three games or four or five games, whatever, of 500, that's fine. However, that includes a stretch from April 30th to May 11th. And remember, May 11th was the end of that losing streak. They were 1-8. From April 30th to May 11th, they were 1-8. So that is included in that last 36 games. So then you take the May 12th date. That's the date that everybody is pushing out there. That's the Mother's Day. That was the last day in Milwaukee. It was when the losing streak ended. Seven-game losing streak. They're 35-22 since that date. Since that game, that's a .614 winning percentage. So, okay, let's go back, because if you go 36-30, which is what the last 66 was, you're 86-76. That's what this team would be, which I don't think is out of the question at all. I think it's probably pretty reasonable. If you play baseball at a .614 winning percentage, which is what they have done since May 12th, you're 90-72. It gives you about 40 wins. In fact, 40 and a half. So you're roughly 90 wins, which in that case, you feel pretty good about yourselves. I'll tell you, last year, the National League wildcard teams were in at 84-78. So if you just go 86-76, you at least feel like there's a reasonable shot you're getting into the playoffs. And keep in mind, the Diamondbacks got in at 84-78, and they were the National League champs. So it can happen. The Brewers, by the way, right now, playing .567 baseball, which is exactly what they did last year. That's identical to where the Brewers were last year. That gets them, if they stay right where they are, to 37 more wins. They're 92-70. So you're looking, I think it's reasonable to expect that this team, the Cardinals team, could be in the mix, A, for the division, the Central Division, and B, certainly for a wild card spot, which is, of course, where you are now. You're in the wild card spot before you get started after the All-Star break. And you're 4.5 games out in the National League Central Division. So I without a doubt, think it is plenty reasonable to believe that this team is going to be in the conversation as we move through the last, a little less than a third of the season to play after, or a little more than a third of the season to play after the All-Star break. And then you start thinking about if they make a move. Can they make a move? Can they somewhere, somehow improve the team? And again, I've talked a lot about it the last 3 days. Like, where does that happen? Does it happen in the bullpen? Do you get a starter? Do you get a bench bat, a right-handed bat off the bench? Those are, I think anybody would tell you, those are the three spots, right? I think in order, it would have to be, I think my top one would have to be a spot in the rotation. A number two guy, preferably, if you can get that, if you can improve your rotation. Because I get it, this lineup isn't what people expected that it was going to be, and the lineup isn't what I think that it probably still can be with when you consider the fact that you're not getting at all what you should or expected to be getting from the two big hitters in the lineup, right? You're getting maybe more than you expected from Mason Wynn and Alec Burleson, so you're picking up some of that slack, but the lineup does have the ability to be dangerous, and we've seen it on a number of occasions. The other thing is the bullpen is really good and can sustain it when it's a close game, whether it's you're down a run and you need a bullpen, a couple of bullpen arms to withhold, withstand two innings, three innings, whatever it's been, so you can come back, or you're up a run and you need the bullpen to hold pat so you can win a game. That's what the Cardinals have done all year long. They've won those close games, the one-run games, at one point, and I don't know where they rank right now as far as in comparison to the rest of the league, but the one-run wins have been what has sustained this team throughout the first half, or the pre-All-Star break, I should say, of the baseball season. In one-run games, they are 18-12. Now, at one point, that was in the top two or three of the National League in one-run games. In blowout games, in games decided by five or more runs, they're 7-15. So they don't win a lot of those, and they do lose their share of those. That's why, as you hear everybody talk about, they've got the negative run differential despite having a winning record. Or I should say they have a winning record despite having the negative run differential. But I think just essentially playing how you have played, if you're the Cardinals, playing how you have played, certainly for the last couple of months, but even in a wider scale, if you're essentially playing the way that this team has played from start to finish, from start to right now, you are looking at a team that is likely to be in the postseason, probably as a wild card, but will be in the conversation for the National League Central Division. You've still got games to play against the Brewers. They have played well. They have actually played well against the teams that have done well this year. They played well against the teams with winning records. You know, they had the tough series against the White Sox. They had a terrible series against the Colorado Rockies at home. You see both of those again coming up later in this season. But there is the opportunity. It starts tomorrow. The Cardinals are back at it tomorrow night against Atlanta. You've got Atlanta. You've got Pittsburgh. You come home for Washington and Texas. That's the end of the month. That's the end of the time before the trade deadline as well, because that Washington series takes you right to Sunday the 28th, Monday the 29th in St. Louis, and then it's the 30th, I believe, is the trade deadline. So July 30th is the transaction deadline. That's where, who knows? That's what we're going to be talking about from now until then, is trying to figure out what, if anything, the Cardinals are going to do. We've got more to come in hour number two of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. We'll talk to Tamar Scheer of KMOV. We'll hopefully have some time to take your calls as well. Joe Pott for Matt Pauly here on this Thursday night. Sports Open Line continues after this.